This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's the 22nd of April, 2021, a Thursday, and markets bouncing back in the U.S. yesterday, carrying through a bit in Asia overnight, so erasing that prior day's weakness, at least in the case of the U.S. Equity market. You can see on slide two, put up a chart of the NASDAQ 100. And while we did retrace a bit here, of course, we have been sort of losing out momentum-wise in over the last week plus. You can see that on something like a stochastic indicator I put in there. And we kind of want to, as we get into the May timeframe, want to sound a bit of a note of caution just on a number of fronts. You can argue valuation-wise, we've talked a little bit about that. But as well, the U.S. tax season coming into view, there's been a lot of gains, to say the least, to be had post-pandemic. And we have a delayed U.S. tax season that's getting into May rather than the normal mid-April timeframe. And then there are a couple of other measures and things like sentiment, which are very inexact, semi-non-science, if you will. Still, I think it's a little bit remarkable. Look at a slide three. I put in here a bull bear index created from taking this AAII weekly survey of those that are bullish, less those that are bearish. And you can see we're at a pretty remarkable string of elevated readings. You can see often that when we see these lower sort of bull bear readings that they sort of jag back and forth, but we've had just a long series of very high readings, something we haven't really seen since, you could argue, the very beginning of 2018 when we saw the so-called volpocalypse, VIX blow up, and before that, heading into late 2014. And if we recall, 2015 was an ugly market for just about every asset class. So I think it's just interesting to sound that general note of broad caution, not talking about tactically day-to-day here, but over the next, let's call it a couple weeks to 6 weeks time frame. But Peter, anything you're pulling out of yesterday's section? I see some weird performance in some of your themes on slide four there.
Yeah. I think you mentioned it just before we went on air. The crypto and blockchain basket up almost 6% is pretty odd given the continuous decline and weak sentiment you see across the crypto space, in particular Bitcoin. But then, you know, more, if we go outside this this fringe business, you see, you know, the next generation medicine bubble stocks basket and e-commerce, etc., pulling ahead. So the risk rebound we had yesterday was very much driven by the speculative segment. Makes sense. You have the longer end of US interest rates still coming down. I think that's fueling the most interest rate sensitive stocks. So there you go. And then the Q1 earnings season, I mean, it's just really delivering across the board. It's not only in the US, also in Europe. I'll come back to that in a few seconds. But if you see on the insert here on slide four, you can see that the revenue surprise ratio have been 5% in aggregate terms for the S&P 500, almost 40% earnings surprise in aggregate terms. A lot of it, it's driven by the cyclicals, the energy sector, the materials sector, which covers metals and mining and chemical companies, the one that is a part of our commodity basket. So we like that, of course. And then financials are doing quite well. And I think this is the general theme. So when we talk about equities and valuations, I mean, we have talked about this endlessly. So on trailing metric basis, it's very expensive. But if you compare it to bonds, it's not expensive. Then we have been talking about. So is it expensive when we view it in terms of forward valuations? It look quite expensive still on a forward basis, but still relative to bonds, I don't think it's that expensive. I would add further on the forward valuation. That takes me to slide five, that just look at the results we've got this morning here in Europe from Nestle, Volvo, and Hamé. They all beating solidly, both on revenue, but also definitely on the profit side. And I think this is the theme that will take equities higher, that it will, I think it will show that the analysts that are putting out these forward estimates are way too pessimistic. They're too conservative. That was what I said on Bloomberg TV yesterday when I was interviewed. I think it will come as a surprise to the market how companies are actually bouncing back and how well they have been in controlling their cost. And I think the revenue will be the biggest surprise here. So that's the big story. This is the narrative that will continue to dominate in equities, I think.
Yeah. And you bring in a very important point there on the relative valuation basis relative to bonds. And of course, we have seen this considerable consolidation in U.S. Treasuries after the tremendous rise in, well, tremendous. It was a significant rise in yield in the first quarter. We've kind of been backtracking since then. Another fairly strong day, if I recall, the five-year even posting a new local low in yield. Altea, that's of course your focus here on fixed income. What are you seeing from the? There was a 20-year auction yesterday in the U.S. What's the feeling in the bond market? At some point, to me, in other words, before I hand it over to you, it's great to see some relief into the equity market because U.S. Treasuries stop the yields stop rising. But at some point, if yields continue lower here, it's saying something about the outlook for the cycle. I would imagine a more pessimistic outlook. What's your take, Altea?
Well, John, I think that if we look at the recent auctions, especially the 20 years auction that we had yesterday, we see that sentiment has clearly improved. And it's about, it's, you know, like the bid to cover of yesterday, 20 years U.S. Treasuries was above 1 year average. And still the yields are close to 1.5% if we look at the 10 years U.S. Treasuries. The point here, John, is that while we see sentiment improving in U.S. Treasuries, the break-even are stalling. And I think that this is just temporary. And as we get towards summer, we will see a more, we will see break even to resume their rise. And if they do that, then nominal yields will start to rise as well. So I think that at this point, if you go on slide 8 and you look at the chart of the 10 years yields on the right side, you will see that the 1.5% remains a support level. However, the real level that we are watching is anything that happens between 1.6 and 2%. And I still believe that 2% is reachable by summer when we have stronger inflation and stronger growth data.
Yeah, and then in Europe, we got a little bit of excitement earlier this week when that 10-year Bund, the German Bund, was pressuring towards that key negative 20 basis point level. It's retreated quite a bit since then, yield-wise. And an ECB meeting up today, and we've talked a lot about with our CIO, Steen Jacobsen, about, you have a difficult situation for the ECB because they don't really need to say anything today. They have a strategy review at the June meeting. They haven't opened up yet, so they don't really know how the economy is going to perform. But the GDP projections are quite aggressive for the balance of the year. There's hawks and there's doves conflicting on the ECB. Lagarde is absolutely terrible at rolling out any kind of message at these press conferences like she will be having today. At some point, maybe not in June, but at some point they're going to have to send a message of a tapering of asset purchases like the Bank of Canada did yesterday. But it just seems like a very awkward process. Do you have any sense of what today will bring, if anything at all?
Well, John, I think that my focus today for the ECB meeting is to try to understand if the ECB is still worried about rising yields in the euro area, because we have seen since the beginning of the month even bond yields rising quite substantially. And in the past few days, yesterday in particular, we have seen sentiment improving. The problem here, John, is that higher bond yields in the European Union are bad because they tighten financial conditions. There is a lot of zombie companies. The net debt to EBITDA of the Eurostock 600 is at the highest since 2000. So what means is that any increase in cost of funding could cause volatility, could cause defaults. So I still think that that should be a main focus for the ECB. And another thing that I will be looking at is whatever Lagarde says about the PEP program. Probably there are basically some oaks that say that tapering of purchases under the PEP won't start at the end of this year. However, the reality is, is the ECB interested into capping the bond yields in the euro area? If that's so, then it would need to keep that program running because money under the recovery fund seems to be delayed.
Yeah, and that will be very interesting down the road if they do have to feel they have to send that taper message like the Bank of Japan already did. Okay, let's go over to you, Ole, because we have with these this consolidation yields, metals, precious metals especially, are doing all they can to get interesting again on this theme. We've broken some spots, but we're just not fully there, I guess, in terms of reversal yet, are we?
No, that's right, John. I think so far the market's taking some comfort from the fact that we have managed to gain a foothold above that 1760 to 65 former resistance, now support area. As I put out in the quick take yesterday, it seems like the longer term trends followers, hedge funds and what have you, there's still quite a short position being held because we've been in a downtrend since August, and some of the indicators I'm looking at, they basically indicating that some of those shorts are not really starting to get too worried until we break above 1800, maybe the 1810 area. So we had the next critical area here just ahead of 1800 and just above. So that could set the tone, and obviously if we do get a momentum driven short covering, then market at least in the short term can diverge somewhat away from focusing just on yields and dollar development. So interesting levels we're approaching. Yesterday, just want to add the rally was actually led by silver. We rallied all the way back to the high we had back in March, as you can see here on slide 10. Palladium made a new record high. Platinum was also on the move. Copper's on the move. So commodities, just in general, are very well bid right now. And if that industrial metal bid continues, then silver potentially continue to lead the recovery here. But as I said, we're not out of the woods yet. We're still in a downtrend, but at least it's starting to improve somewhat.
Yeah, and a market that's quite idiosyncratic and not necessarily correlated across the board is the grain market, and you're seeing strength to strength here in grains. Is what's going on in the grain space? I think at some level this becomes a more urgent issue for especially for some countries.
Yeah, it is already starting to have an impact, no doubt about that. And I put in the Bloomberg Commodity Grains Spot Index because normally I watch the total return index from an investment perspective. But if you just look at the spot index, that just gives an idea about how far we traveled now over the past year. We are currently 53% above the average price seen during the past 5 years.
And this is
back to
and
the
this is
highest
on.
levels.
And this is on slide 11. Just sorry to break in there, just
this
so
on slide 11.
Folks,
yeah, sorry.
Folks can
Indeed,
orient themselves
yeah.
where we are.
Yeah, exactly. Slide 11 there. So from a spot basis, we've hit the highest. That sector has hit the highest level in eight years, and that clearly will start to. Oh, it's already having an impact. It could also potentially be the reason why we will see the market the rally slow sooner or later. We just heard news out of China that the government it wants to recommend to changing the or reducing the amount of corn and soy meal used in animal feed. Not sure what they want to substitute it with, but at least that potentially, if that is carried out, that could potentially reduce some of the demand coming from China. But overall, it is a weather worry right now. We've got cold weather in the US, we've got dry weather in South America. Europe is not off to a good start either. It's freezing cold right now outside where we're sitting. Generally, the next few weeks are going to be very critical.
Key season for the Northern Hemisphere. Not a good segue here, but I want to circle back to foreign exchange, where we had a very interesting Bank of Canada meeting yesterday that surprised the market with the Bank of Canada becoming the first G10 bank to actually carry out a taper. Quite an interesting development there, but it's also especially the more aggressive tone on or anticipation of how quickly Canada's economic recovery will be quote unquote full. And that time frame is moved all the way forward to the second half of 2022 rather than sometime in 2023. A very strong reaction in FX, as you can see on slide 6. Dollar Canada was teasing, it's not a very exact line, but semi-sloping head and shoulders style. Line in the sand there that was briefly breached yesterday before the collapse on the Bank of Canada meeting, and that's sets the focus lower again. I think it'll be happy to turn around back higher, however, if we do see another ugly bout of risk sentiment or a steep oil sell-off. If I look over at Canadian rates, For example, the 5-year, it looked like it was getting pretty excited about this development yesterday and rose 6, 7, 8 basis points, but sort of settled back basically unchanged the previous day. So I think it's a one-off adjustment. I don't think it's necessarily a sign of a massive new trend, unless that trend is the fact that the dollars are going to start weakening broadly. However, if you look in some of the crosses, I do think it does, you know, give the Canadian dollar a bit of a leg up on somewhere on a currency like the Aussie, at least from the central bank perspective, as the RBA continues to stay mute on its plans and sort of is insisting on this 2024 timeframe. I think they're quite FX sensitive in Australia as well. Interesting turnaround in Aussie CAD yesterday. And if you look at the structure there, that whole episode above 97 and up towards parity has been rejected. And this local little sell-off providing a hook for those looking for fresh outperformance from Canada. By the way, just on the FX board there on slide 7, you can also see that gold in trending terms is outperforming all of fiat at the moment. I think that's kind of an interesting development. But talk about interesting developments. I think something that the market is not really picking up on the degree to which perhaps it should, also perhaps because this is a long haul issue, and that is antitrust. And we had a hearing yesterday, two hearings actually, the nomination hearing for Lina Khan. I mentioned that in yesterday's podcast, who would become one of the FTC, Federal Trade Commission, commissioners, if she is approved. We'll be looking for whether she can get some bipartisan support for that nomination. But as well, a hearing yesterday, Peter, on I think the only issue, or the key issue at least, was certainly the Apple App Store and Google Play Store and the abusive practices there. And it's really interesting to see. I tweeted out an article on our Saxo Market Call Twitter account, a Market Watch story talking about this issue, the hearing itself, and some of the specific issues. The Spotify one was, I think, the most interesting, but also just the quotes from senators on both sides of the aisle, especially somebody like this guy Hawley, a Republican from Missouri, the famous fist pumper to the rioters just before they were descending on the Capitol Hill on January 6th, in the same hearing as a Democrat, and both clearly hostile to Apple in this case, in this article. Any additional thoughts on where this is headed or time frame? I think it's really difficult, the time frame, I guess, for all of this.
Yeah, it is. I think ultimately, right now, here and now, the decision you have to make is, do you believe Apple and Google will continue to charge 30% or not? And if you don't believe they will win this battle, both against the government but all other important companies, then it's a huge hit to the future growth of Apple, because they are, you know, bidding very heavily on their services segment to carry the company maybe to $3 trillion market cap. It certainly isn't going to be from the hardware side. So, and I think that it was an interesting hearing, and also the comments from Spotify. We have to remember it. This goes back all the way, I think 1.5 year, maybe almost 2 years ago, 1.5 years ago, with the, just before the pandemic, with Epic Games launching this attack on Apple, basically, and being thrown out of the App Store. With one of the most popular gaming production companies in the world, they basically started the fight. And then you had, you know, the Danish guy David Hanmar Hansen, you know, the guy that invented Ruby on Rails, very successful IT entrepreneur. He created this Hey, which is an alternative email to Gmail, etc., which is actually paying email services. Not too long spiel here, but the point being that he was, you know, furious over that you couldn't sign up for Hey on their website and they enable that subscription on the App Store. Apple wanted to have that 30%, so basically a ransom, and they were preparing to take it to a legal fight. But then eventually he used his huge fame, went on stage to one of the big developer conferences, and basically, you know, blasted at Apple. And they basically came back and said, okay, all small developers, Google did the same thing, will charge you less than 30%. I don't know whether it's down to 10 or 15, and it's up to a certain revenue point. So, you know, the cracks have already started. I don't think Apple and Google will win this. This is just like the Super League. It's so grotesque. It's so out of touch with, you know, value creation, capitalism, free market competition, all these things. It will not survive the popular opinion. I don't think so.
Yeah. Key point there. And just for the perspective, just that single company, Spotify, was mentioning that they paid $500 million to Apple for you know, I don't actually know if that was for a year, but that's just the size of you know, something like that. Just one company, $500 million, having its having that revenue disappear in terms of the multiples into the stock annually. It says $500 million annually. So I just double checked that. Actually, no, that's the Match Group. Sorry, that's the Match Group dating service. That's a separate store, but I don't know how much Spotify was paying in aggregate. Anyway, it's staggering amounts. If suddenly that is reduced to a small fraction, that's the key point, obviously. But yeah, let's get back to the day to day. We've got earnings in focus, of course, for today as well. And Intel, I guess, is the big one.
Yeah, Intel is the big one. They recently made a strategy shift, as we have also commented on this podcast. They have, you know, embraced the foundry model, which is basically the arch success of TSMC, this Taiwanese semiconductor company that is very well known these days. Basically, that you're willing to produce computer chips for others if they come with the schematics. You can probably also help them with the schematics. But so this is also, there was the old business of ARM Holdings, the ones that are now being tried to be acquired by NVIDIA, that you could sort of get a special purpose semiconductor produced with intellectual property rights by ARM Holdings. You'll pay them some license, you would go to TSMC, they would produce it for you, and bang, you would have a very nice computer chip right there. Intel have had a much more closed ecosystem approach. They wanted to outsource all production out of expensive areas, especially the US. Now the new CEO have totally made a 180 degree change on the strategy. I think they're capitalizing on the US-China tension and the nervousness over Taiwan in this conflict, or tensions, if you will. So they have embracing the foundry model. They're bringing back production to the US, and so this is going to be super interesting earnings from Intel. And then, of course, we have Snap as well, is the other one we have focused on today. Snap will be the first one of the online advertising platforms that will report their earnings. And we know there was a lot of tailwind because of the lockdown. So, you know, online spending just exploded, and as a result also advertising. And I think the Q1 here will begin to be the first like for like, or year year, if you will, idea of whether that tailwind is disappearing, and to what degree. So that's what we're going to look at.
Good stuff. And before I get to the macro calendar on slide 14, just a reminder that Ole Hansen, our head of commodity strategy, on this call recorded that most recent commodities update webinar from Tuesday. You can find that on webinars.saxo. And if you scroll to the bottom, there's a previous webinars section. You just click play and you can see the whole thing. On the macro front, of course, ECB is out today. We're not expecting a lot, but there could be interesting signs of, again, cracks, internal cracks in the debate, etc. Although I'm sure President Lagarde will do her absolute best to muddle the message at the press conference. These are toe-curling affairs, these press conferences, but we have to see what comes from that. The latest weekly initial jobless claims from the U.S., interesting after the big drop we saw last week, below 600K for the first time in a post-pandemic breakout. And some bits and pieces of the flash April services and manufacturing PMI, starting with Australia and Japan in Asia tonight, and then rolling through to the European ones tomorrow, as well as a Russian central bank announcement. And then on a final note, we have Biden expected today to announce a official recognition of the Armenian genocide of 1915 to 17. There is an anniversary day on Saturday, and U.S. Congress has already sort of, you know, made this commemoration or this declaration, but coming from Biden himself, of course, is going to set tensions on fire between the U.S. and specifically Turkey. Obviously, President Erdogan, the response there, I don't think it's necessarily something that's going to be productive for the Turkish lira, which is already on edge, and the opposition and its complaints about Erdogan's misguided policies and handling the defense, the attempted defense of the Turkish lira and all the reserves that were employed in that and mobilized that. There was a big splash article in the FT on that today. So just watch that space. Be wary of trading Turkish lira around that. That's it for today. We'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call. Thanks for joining.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call, or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.